Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, September the 18th. This morning, we're going to chat with our good friend George Rodriguez in South Texas. I'm sure that if you've been watching the news, even the New York Times is talking about this, so it's getting a lot of attention. But there's a problem down in Del Rio, Texas. Normally, Del Rio, Texas is a quiet border community. Not much happens there, but a lot is happening there. There's like 10,000 people under a bridge who apparently want to come into the United States. They're coming from Haiti, which is interesting. That's a new element to the border situation. Then we're just going to look at the border situation in general. The morale of the Border Patrol people is something of concern to a lot of us. I understand that they're under a lot of stress, and many of them are having a hard time coping with it. Also, we're going to look at some options for Governor Abbott, especially given the total negligence of the federal government on this topic. And then we'll talk about the political mood in South Texas. So a lot to get into here with our friend George. So let me say hello to George Rodriguez. How are you, George?
There. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, yeah. I've got to apologize to the folks real quick because I'm on cell phone today. This morning. But it's beautiful down here today. I mean, this is one of the Chamber of Commerce days in San Antonio. It's I'd say 72, 73 degrees and very low humidity. And, I mean, it's no breeze. It is fantastic. I just can't say enough.
We're 3 days away from fall, George. So, fall is officially here in 3 days, although at least up here in North Texas, we don't, the summer doesn't say goodbye quickly. It usually hangs around for a few days to make its point. Lots of stuff going on down on the border, so I wanted to get your take on it. But I want to begin very quickly saying happy Independence Day to all of our friends in Chile. I know there's a couple of them who listen to the podcast, so happy Independence Day. It was 1810 when Chile became one of the first Latin American republics, and they've been a pretty good country overall, had a bit of political turmoil about almost 50 years ago with Allende and then Pinochet. But, they're doing well. They have a strong economy. They have a very nice middle-class country, and they have the most unique geography in the world. If you look at the map of South America, I mean, it's almost the entire Pacific coastline, one little narrow stretch, right, very, very long from the north to the south, tremendous variety in climate. So anyway, George, happy independence to our friends in Chile. Anybody from Chile that you know or remember, George?
Well, I had I've got a very dear friend, a former roommate and dear friend that served his Mormon mission in Chile. Unfortunately or fortunately, I mean, he learned a lot from it. He was there when the Pinochet government took over from Allende.
Yeah.
And he had some stories to tell, let me tell you.
I bet. Yeah, that was a very difficult period for Chile. I can relate a quick story before we get to South Texas that in the summer of 1973, my father had a colleague, a business friend who went down to Chile. And he came back, and I remember he was over at the house, and we were talking about all of this, and my friend was just saying, the situation down in Chile is unsustainable. Something has to explode. he was talking about shortages and chaos and, you know, long lines to buy anything, stuff that had never really happened in Chile because Chile had always been a very stable country. But as it turned out, you're right, Pinochet took over in September, and, you know, whether people love him or hate him, he did straighten out the economy. And when he handed over the control of the country to a democratically elected leader, the country economically, at least, was in pretty good shape and fairly continues to be since then. So absolutely interesting country. But let's talk about South Texas, George. Del Rio, Texas. I bet most people had not heard about Del Rio, Texas in a long time. I certainly hadn't. I had not. I mean, I know where it is, but I think it's one of those towns that you don't hear that much about, and all of a sudden Del Rio is on the news. So what I understand there's 10,000 Haitian refugees on the other side, or I'm not sure what side they're on. They may be on the U.S. side. And so what's the latest that you're hearing about that, George?
Well, I saw it personally, so I'm not hearing any more about it. The number of 10,000 is it's been way beyond that now. I'd say it's almost 15 at this point. It's growing exponentially. I mean, it's just growing by the moment, by the minute. They are on the Texas side. There is a small dam between Ciudad Acuña and Del Rio, and literally it is serving as a pathway for hundreds, maybe thousands at this point, of people to cross the border. It's very, very interesting how this phenomenon has started and developed. And unfortunately, as usual, the Biden administration is doing nothing to discourage it, but they are encouraging it now with a new policy called the Haitian Temporary Stay Policy, which means that the Haitians are going to be allowed to stay in the United States temporarily, which is only going to encourage more to come. What is happening is that a small group of Haitians about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, showed up, all carrying cell phones. I mean, they are all carrying cell phones. I mean, this is a phenomenon that should be investigated. But they're all carrying cell phones. They're carrying about $400-$500 in cash. One of these sheriffs was telling me that everybody that he has picked up for trespassing immediately is either able to bond out or is bonded out by somebody. And they pay in cash with $100 bills. He had a stack of almost $35,000, all $100 bills.
Wow.
Not 20s, not 5s, not 10s. So that's very, very unusual. What is happening is that these people are all calling their friends and telling them to come on, that you can cross right now. And I guarantee that by now everybody's talking about the temporary stay policy. And so, you know, that's gonna encourage even more Haitians.
Yeah. Let me bring a point here, George. I don't know if you've heard about this, so let me bring it up. But I was watching a little clip on the computer. I was watching a little news clip from NBC, and there was a reporter from NBC who's familiar, I guess, with the area. And she was saying something very interesting. She was saying, because they asked her, where are these people coming from? Did they actually come over from Haiti and take the trip, I guess, by boat and land in Mexico or whatever? And this lady said, no. Most of these people were already in another Latin American country, that they had gone from Haiti to another country, let's say Colombia, Panama, Chile, whatever. Probably not Venezuela or Cuba, but some other countries. And that they were actually coming to the United States not from Haiti, but from another country, that the word got out that, like you were saying, get up to the border. So that I think explains, now that you mentioned the $100 and now that you mentioned the cell phones, that these are not people that, you know, the kinds of people you associate with Haitian refugees who are coming over, who are undernourished and very poor. These may very well be middle-class Haitians who managed to get out through Latin America and managed to come all the way up to the border. Now, they probably got some help getting up to the border, I'm guessing. Probably a good guess, I think. But that's what I've heard. Have you heard anything like that, George?
No, but what I'm seeing is that these are definitely not middle-class people. I'm sorry to differ, but they are not middle-class people. Where they are coming from, and I think that you're listening to a very soft spin by NBC or by the media, these people, the majority of them were in Tapachula, and Mexico was holding them back. They had been steadily streaming past the checkpoints in Mexico, and they had been arriving in mass. There is a video that I saw yesterday of a friend of mine showing me how they were carjacking, or bus jacking in this case. They were hijacking buses in Ciudad Acuña as they arrived in various spots in Acuña. They would they were literally ordering people to get off the buses so that they could en masse get on and then commandeer the bus to the border, where they would then, like I said, cross the little makeshift bridge. The big concern is that these are not middle-class people. These are folks who live by the law that they institute, that they use. And so right now they are being contained by a small group of law enforcement, combination Texas Department of Public Safety, Border Patrol, local sheriffs, local police. But if these folks, you know, and like I said, at this point today, I would say that there's going to be about 15,000 by now.
Right.
If they choose to bust out, there's nothing that they can do about it.
Right.
But another thing beyond that, and, you know, we were talking about the chaos in Chile. The other thing that's going to happen is that because there has been so much discussion and frustration on the border about the crisis, there are lots of people, including people in nearby neighborhoods there to the border, to the bridge in Del Rio, ranchers, folks that have showed up, and they are, you know, they're not very far away from the bridge. They're not far away. And, you know, I hate to scare folks, but they are armed.
Right.
And they are frustrated.
Right.
And if Biden and the leftist, Ocasio-Cortez and all these folks wanted to create a powder keg, they have done it. They have done a very, very good job.
Well, thank you very much for clarifying that story about, you know, who these people are, because the lady at NBC was convinced of what she was saying, but, you know, you have to consider the source. But still, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter where they came from as a practical matter. They're at the border right now. Now, I understand from some news reports that there are going to be planes to fly them back. Well, try putting those people in a plane.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not going
to
be.
I would like to buy a ticket to that one.
Yeah, because that's going to be, at the very least, they're going to have to do it forcibly, and who knows what could happen. You know, there could be a confrontation. I mean, and this is what upsets me more than anything else. We'll talk about the Border Patrol people in a minute. We're asking Border Patrol, and we're asking the Texas law enforcement, the Texas Rangers or whatever, to do work that they shouldn't have to do. I mean,
that's right.
The Texas Rangers and the Border Patrol should not be enforcing. I mean, the Border Patrol, I guess, enforces the law in the sense that they process people. But they're not, I mean, they're not supposed to be there holding back people who are pushing over. And that's what bothers me most of anything else. Now, again, in the interest of full disclosure, I came to this country as an immigrant. But we came here, there was an orderly way of coming in. You know, there was a process that we had to follow. And even Mariel, everybody likes to talk about how the Cubans get preferential treatment. Well, Mariel was 1 month, and that was 100,000 people, and that was like Disney compared to this, because with the Mariel boat lift, most of those people ended up in Miami. Most of them had families in Miami, and the families basically assumed responsibility for them. Now, there were some bad people, no question about it, and they ended up in jail or they caused problems. But again, Mariel is Disney compared to this. I mean, is over a million people over 8 months, and that is frightening to begin with. George, let me take a quick break, and then I want to get your review of the situation with the Border Patrol and their morale, which I understand it's a bit low. And also, let's talk a little bit about some options here for Governor Abbott on the border. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with George right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. George, you know, I was listening to a news report the other day that the morale of the Border Patrol is very low at the moment, not good. And part of the problem is that we're asking them, they're working 7 days a week. I mean, they don't have a day off. I mean, their lives have been turned upside down. And on top of that, of course, there's COVID. Some of them have been impacted by it. And so, you know, it seems to me, George, that we're sitting here asking the Border Patrol to do things that this was not part of their job description to do stuff like this. I mean, yes, of course, they're there to do their job and enforce the law in the sense of how they process people, but they're not supposed to be babysitters. They're not supposed to be holding back 10,000 people under a bridge. That's not what they're supposed to do, George. And I think a lot of these men and women now who have done a great job over the years, they're, to say the least, disenchanted, George.
Yeah, the morale is really, really low. And it's for various reasons. Let me tell you, I mean, it's not just that, you know, they are being just disrespected, and they are being asked to do work that's definitely not what they're supposed to do. It goes to a very, very personal point. For example, as I mentioned, these folks from Haiti are not, you know, I hate to say it, but they're just not the cream of the crop. And what is happening is that we are discovering that a lot of them are carrying diseases and parasites. I mean, that's the fact. And one of the things that started happening yesterday, that Homeland Security started ordering so that they can, you know, address the issue, as they put it, they started loading up folks, courtesy of the Department of Education, on local school buses. Apparently, the Department of Education instructed local school districts that you know, that they would get extra money or whatever if they helped out. So the school district sent school buses. Well, what is happening now is that you're loading up folks who have, you know, COVID, maybe, TB, maybe. There has been one case of that has not been confirmed, but of leprosy. You know, who knows what, you know, but these folks are now going to be loaded onto school buses that come Monday. They're going to be busing kids. So the people are being bused to McAllen, to Brownsville, to be processed, as they put it, which means that they're going to be re-released into the country under this temporary status initiative now. And so the Border Patrol are just, I mean, you know, they've got kids in school districts, and so they're very, very upset about that. Then there's the whole issue of the frustration, the lack of respect. There was there have been some folks from Black Lives Matter that have been active the past couple of days
in providing information, humanitarian assistance, as they put it, to the Haitians, to the Angolans. And they one of the things that they immediately tell them is don't talk to the Border Patrol. Well, you know, here we go again.
That's right.
So the whole situation is one where it's almost antagonistic
mm-hmm.
towards the Border Patrol.
Right.
It really is.
Well, let me ask you again, getting back to the Haitian refugees. I can understand a person from Guatemala showing up on the border. I can understand a person from El Salvador. I mean, I understand the logistics of that. But somebody from Haiti, normally people from Haiti show up in Florida.
In Miami.
Yeah, Miami. Yeah. Or, yeah, Florida. So how did these people, I mean, what are you hearing? I mean, how did they actually, see, this is insane to me. I mean, when I saw that 10,000 people were under a bridge, I thought, well, it must be another caravan or something like that. But when I heard it was Haitians, I had to ask myself all kinds of questions. I mean, it's not like Haiti. It's not like they can walk to Mexico from Haiti, George.
Yeah. The two scenarios that we are hearing, the two routes that we are hearing that are being utilized, one is from Haiti to Nicaragua, and then from Nicaragua up to the Mexican border.
Okay.
The other one is to Venezuela, and then from Venezuela, they are packed up, given assistance, and then sent merrily on their way to Panama, and then from Panama on up. You know, all of these countries along the way don't want them. So they gleefully pack them up and keep them moving. They help them. They taxi them. And that's really, really what, you know, the bottom line to how they're reaching us so quickly.
Right. And of course, I would assume that there are some criminal elements.
Oh, definitely.
Who are driving them and moving them around. But I mean, this is a total, complete disgrace. Now, let's talk about Governor Abbott. He's in a difficult position, of course, because he's a governor of a state on the border, has a border. He's dealing with all of this, but at the same time, it is the federal government who has a responsibility to tackle this problem. This is not a problem for Texas. But at what point, George, in your opinion, does Governor Abbott just say, the heck with this, I'm going to close the border, and I'm going to take over, and if they want to sue me, go right ahead. How close are we to that, George?
Well, we're there on part of it. On Thursday, he did announce that he was closing the border ports of entry, that he was closing six of them, El Paso, Del Rio, Eagle Pass, Laredo, Brownsville, McAllen. And however, immediately, the Biden administration said, no, you're not, because that's not your role. And he backed off. There is a lot of criticism of the governor on social media, and I got myself into a very strong debate yesterday over it. But you know, people want him to invoke the first Article 1 of the Constitution, which means that, you know, if the federal government isn't doing it, well, at least that's what they claim it means.
Mm-hmm.
They want him that since the federal government isn't doing their job, that the state government is going to do their job. You know, it's not that
simple. Now, George, forgive me. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to clarify that point you just made. I just want to make sure I understand it. Are you talking about something in the U.S. Constitution or the Texas Constitution? I didn't understand.
The U.S.
Say it again.
Yeah, in the U.S. Constitution, the phrase that they are hanging their hats on says that whatever the federal government, whatever rights are not given to the federal government, the state government retains.
Well, that's the Tenth Amendment, basically. That's the Tenth Amendment.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And then needs to be done if the federal government is failing, the state government can do it.
Right.
Well, that's what they're hanging their hat on, that in this case, the federal government is not protecting the border, is not stopping illegal immigration, and therefore the state should do it. Well, yeah, you know, that is that is an interpretation, and that is, you know, what possibly could be done. However, they forget a lot of things. First of all, that we don't control the White House. Secondly,
right.
that we don't control the Congress. Thirdly, you would have to get to the Supreme Court, and how long it would take the Supreme Court, you know, to get to the Supreme Court, get pretty quick. But even then, how will the Supreme Court rule? The fact of the matter is that illegal immigration is it's in the purview. It is the role of the federal government, and they are failing. Now, how we are supposed to respond to that, and how the governor is supposed to react to it, you know, it depends on how much guts he's got, and how much he's willing to fight. Because right now they want, you know, I mean, there are people that want him to secede. Well, you know, that's, you know, to me, that's just not realistic. It's just not. Let's talk about what we can do.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, we are hamstrung. We are hamstrung. And, again, we are hamstrung because I don't blame anybody but conservative voters who, you know, have not been doing their job in keeping Congress and in keeping the media honest, because, you know, gosh, everything we do is Nazis and, you know, anti-immigrant, et cetera, et cetera. We have just not done our job in the debates. And now, you know, and the final thing, Silvio, the final thing is that this immigration crisis, this border crisis that we've got, is the product of hundreds of years of ignoring the problem, of utilizing illegal immigration for its benefits because of cheap labor, et cetera, for a long, long time. And now that it's out of control in the 21st century, because people can reach us, not just from Mexico, overnight, now all of a sudden we're kind of like freaked out that we've got a border crisis, that we've got an illegal alien crisis. Well, we've had it for years, man. We've had it for
years.
Well,
and that's true. I mean, there have been other times. I mean, you can go back to the 1950s, right after World War
yep.
II, when you had that big boom of construction in California and a big economic boom. That's in essence what gave us the Bracero program, which
right,
is
exactly.
a way of controlling illegal immigration. But I think the big difference now, and where I think the governor has a stronger hand, is that, well, number one, everybody can see the images. I mean, you don't have to.
Oh gosh,
it's
yeah.
not like, you know. You know, in the 1940s or 1950s, I mean, you had three networks for 30 minutes telling you what to do. But, I mean, this is – all you got to do is look at the Internet and see all the photos. Number two, the other difference with the past is that they're now coming from lots of different countries. And number three, and this is the point that I – it's amazing to me that this is does not get made more often. We're in the middle of a pandemic, George. They're telling us –
Oh, by the way.
yeah, by the way, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and they're telling us that if you have a company of 100 employees or more, that you got to get vaccinated. But yet, I don't know, George. I'm going to take a wild guess, and maybe this is just a wild guess, that very few of those 10,000 people under the bridge have a vaccination card. Am I being – is that fair?
Oh, my gosh, to say the least.
So you've got 10,000 people sitting under a bridge that have not been vaccinated, who want to come over, and God only knows what else they're bringing. You're exactly right. I think sometimes Americans, and I'm going to say something, it's not really a criticism of Americans, because I love the United States. You know my story. I love the United States. But sometimes Americans are a bit naive, because we have it so good in the United States, particularly in the area of public health. We have it so good that we forget that there are other parts of the world where they have diseases that we haven't had in 50 years. People are coming from parts of the world where kids die of these diseases, where life expectancy is a lot shorter because of health issues. And we Americans are so fortunate that, in essence, we've put all of that behind us. And now you have this situation, and you're sitting there going, wait a minute, what else are they bringing? And why aren't we checking it? I mean, look, George, it doesn't seem unreasonable to me for a country to say, If you want to come in, you got to respect the law. And by the way, you got to get a medical exam because we want to know what in the heck, who in the heck you are and what kind of health you're in. That's not unreasonable. That's what most countries do, George.
That's exactly right. And again, the people that I saw, the people that are from Haiti and from Angola and from Zaire that I saw arriving, these are mostly young men. They are not families. They are not kids. They are young men. And I'm sorry, you know, I just anticipate that in the next 48, maybe 72 hours, we're going to see an attempt by these guys to break out. They are impatient. They are not used to law and order. They're coming from countries that are I'm not sure how else to put it, but they're coming from countries that are just not civilized like we are.
Well,
this situation is the perfect powder keg that possibly these folks, you know, were going. And it dovetails. It dovetails into our next conversation about the impact on Hispanic Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Hispanic Democrats that are suddenly freaking out. The mayor of Del Rio,
mm-hmm.
who is openly declared homosexual
mm-hmm.
Democrat, he has condemned the Biden administration. He condemned them so strongly on Thursday and again yesterday. You have folks within the county, the state government, or the state representatives that continue to be silent, or even in some cases they try to defend this border crisis. But the vast majority of Hispanic voters, whether they are registered Democrats or not, are watching this and are frustrated, angry, and scared to death.
Right. Well, that's it. They're frustrated. They're frustrated because they don't, you know, they're frustrated like I'm frustrated, George. I think a lot of people are frustrated when they see something like this and they see 10,000 people under a bridge and they go, wait a minute. What's going to happen next? And you're probably right. There's going to be some kind of a confrontation because as I understand the news this morning, there are some airplanes ready to take them back. But that's going to be fun to watch when they start saying, okay, everybody in the bus because we're going to take you back. Some of them will, but I think a lot of them, like you say, are probably going to run in and try to get away from the authorities. And I just hope we have a backup line that can pick up the ones who run away. But a total complete mess on the border, George, as always.
It is incredible. It is a disaster.
I saw a statement the other day by a lady down who has been a journalist in that area for some time. I don't remember her name. She was a Hispanic lady who apparently, like you, has grown up in South Texas, born in South Texas and grown up down there. And she was saying that she has covered the border all her life and that she's never seen anything like this before. And I have not either. I've been following the border for a long time, and I haven't either. And you're there, George, and you haven't either. So this is I think the word mess is almost too nice. This is a disaster, and it's a humanitarian disaster. And what we are doing to the people who work in Border Patrol is unbelievable, But that is where we are, and of course President Biden is silent about this, which is incredible to me as well. Well, George, I want to thank you for your time as always. I want to thank you for your time as always. Anything else you want to say? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. We were all asking yesterday where the vice president is because you know she should be there.
Well, we see less of the vice president than we do the president. Have you noticed that?
And I do.
We never see the president, and I guess we certainly wasn't she the lady that was given this responsibility?
Exactly.
I thought she was going to get to the source. But I tell you what the source of the problem is. The source of the problem is that we're not enforcing immigration laws.
You don't have to go
to Guatemala to find what the source of the problem is. They have a problem now. They've had it for centuries. But the source of this problem is that we're not enforcing immigration laws on the border. George, you have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
And you have you're going to go to a political activity tonight. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, one of the many Republicans that has decided to challenge the Democrats, a Democrat senator here in South Texas, is having a fundraiser. That Democrat, that senator, all of a sudden decided that he was going to resign at the end of the special session. So the word is that it's not that he's resigning because, you know, he wants to. He sees the writing on the wall,
right,
and he wants off of the ship real quick because
he
sees a ship that's sinking.
Right, and I think there's going to be – look, I really believe this, it's been tough over the years to make predictions about the Hispanic vote because a lot of times we think that, you know, the it's going to turn and then we get disenchanted. But I do think that there's going to be a big surprise down there in your part of the state. And because I think that a lot of Hispanics on the border, the good people who live on the border, the mom and dad, the business owners, the good people who live down there, the ranchers and so on, I think they've had it with this stuff. They say, this is crazy. This is not immigration. This is not DACA. This is chaos. And I think that's right. And that's it. Well, George, have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
And the next time we chat, I want to get into redistricting, which I'm sure is going to be a very easy issue. I'm sure you would agree with me on that.
All right, buddy.
All right.
I'll be
thank
ready.
Thank you so much, George.
Have a good one.
Our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas, always like to check with him. But, folks, the situation in Del Rio, Texas, I had not heard that name in a long time, this quiet little town on the border. I think one time I drove there. But it's a nice little border town, you know. They have great Mexican food, some nice churches. Well, that town is now in the middle of a humanitarian crisis that is just indescribable, if that's the right word. It cannot be described what is happening down there. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye, everybody.